What we're going to be looking at this morning is Hebrews chapter 5. Because I was in Toowoomba last week, I didn't catch what Steve did, so you've got my summary from last week. So, not last week, but a few weeks ago, on chapter 4. And that idea of rest, and that the Israelites didn't get the real rest that God was talking about, that was something that was for later on. And he ends up the chapter with this discussion about the high priest and the idea that they have a high priest that can sympathize with those that he is high priest to. And in the next chapter, in chapter 5, he's going to take up that concept of high priest. And remember that the idea behind Hebrews is looking at the old and the new, and how the old is inferior to the new. And primarily that's focused around Christ. So, starting with a bit of history, looking at Exodus 28, verses 1 to 5. And in the instructions that God's giving, he gets to the priesthood. And in verse 28 he says, "Have Aaron your brother brought to you from among the Israelites, along with his sons Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar, so that they may serve me as priests. Make sacrament garments for your brother Aaron to give him dignity and honor. Tell all the skilled workers to whom I have given wisdom in such matters, they are to make garments for Aaron, for his consecration, so that he may serve me as a priest. These are garments they are to make: a breastplate, an ephod, a robe, a woven tunic, a turban, and a sash. These are to make these sacred garments for your brother Aaron and his sons, so they may serve me as priests. Have them use gold and purple, blue and purple, and scarlet yarn, and fine linen." And he goes on and he talks about in some of the later parts of some of the tasks that the high priests had. And you'll see where that's relevant. Because when we get into Hebrews chapter 5, in the first few verses, he's talking about the priesthood, particularly the high priest under the Levitical priesthood. And he starts off in verse 1, "For every high priest taken from among you is appointed for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins, that he have compassion on those who are ignorant and going astray, since he himself is also subject to weakness. Because of this, he is required, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer sacrifices for sins, and no man takes this honor to himself, but he who is called by God, just as Aaron was." So in the discussion then of the high priest, we saw in Exodus 28 that God called Aaron and his sons to be priests, to minister. And I'm not going to go through the whole of the Old Testament mechanism for the priests, but just the idea that the Holy of Holies was reserved for the high priest and only on certain days. And as we saw from the reading, they were marked out because of their clothing. When Hebrews takes up the discussion of the high priest, he describes it in a number of ways. And I'm going to call these qualifications a bit later, purely because it's how Christ is going to be compared to the Levitical high priests. And they've got certain criteria that they need to meet. And again, how Christ meets those. So in the discussion of the high priest, he's talking about he's representing men. He's representing the Israelites. In what? In matters concerning God. And that he was appointed by God. And it doesn't come across quite as nicely in the English, but the word "that" in Greek implies a purpose. He was doing this because his job was to present the gifts and sacrifices for sin. And as you look through a lot of the Old Testament, particularly when you get into Leviticus, a lot of it is, for this you do, you offer this, for that you offer that. And it's all these gifts and sacrifices are laid out, different times of the year, different purposes. And that was the part of the priesthood. And in particular, the discussion here is the high priest. You'll notice there's a couple of Greek bits thrown in for those who are into the Greek. But just the idea of, in some translations, you'll have bear gently or compassion. So the high priest was to have compassion for his fellow men as part of his role. And interestingly, because it talks about the idea of, you know, sins committed in ignorance, etc. And again, it's directly taken from the Old Testament, where the priest was made atonement for the person who sins unintentionally, when he sins unintentionally before the Lord, to make atonement for him, and it shall be forgiven him. And again, that's just, again, from Numbers. Notice as well that part of it is that the high priest is also has the same weaknesses as those he's serving. So it's not a matter of, well, this one's super exceptional and we're all different, but rather it was one from their own. And so also has that shared understanding, that shared weaknesses. And notice as well when it talks about the idea of in this weakness, he has to make sacrifices for himself as well as for the people. And if you look in Leviticus 16, starting in verse 6, it says, Aaron shall offer the bull as a sin offering, which is for himself, and make atonement for himself and for his house. And then he shall take the two goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Then Aaron shall cast lots for the two goats, one lot for the Lord and the other lot for the scapegoat. Aaron shall bring the goat on which the Lord's lot fell and offer it as a sin offering. But the goat on which the lot fell to be the scapegoat shall be presented alive before the Lord to make atonement upon it and to let him go as a scapegoat into the wilderness. And you remember we refer to this in the Lord's Supper, the idea of the scapegoat. But the verse before, you'll notice, it's talking about Aaron and his household. So first of all, he does that, and then he does it for him, for the rest of the people, and the idea of the scapegoat, etc. So, when you look at this, and again, qualifications is probably not the right words, but in the analysis that he's doing between the two covenants, he's highlighting these two. And that is, that ability to sympathize, to have compassion, to understand what those that you are serving are going through, and be appointed by God. And those are the two things he highlights in the passage. And notice as well the words he uses to describe it. Honor and glory. Picking up then in Hebrews chapter 5, after dealing with that picture from the Old Testament, he now turns his attention to Christ. And so he starts off in verse 5. So also, Christ did not glorify himself to become high priest, but it was he who said to him, you are my son, today I have begotten you. As he also says in another place, you are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. And he's got there in two quotes dealing from the Old Testament. But notice that what he's arguing in there is that Jesus was divinely appointed. One of the criteria that he's given in the discussion of the high priest that he's had earlier. And for the first one, he quotes Psalms 2:7, which says, I will declare the decree. The Lord has said to me, you are my son. Today I have begotten you. And you'll notice that's a common quote in the scriptures. And he's already gone back to that in Hebrews chapter 1, when he's talking about the idea that Christ was superior to the angels because he was a son. They weren't. And so again, he's picking up on that idea. But the second quote, and again, this, when you read the whole quote, you'll think, I've said that before in the New Testament. Surprise. So he starts off in Psalm 110 in verse 1. The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies your footstool. The Lord shall send the rod of your strength out of Zion, the rule in the midst of your enemies. These people shall be volunteers in the days of your power, in the beauties of your holiness. From the womb of the morning you have the dew of your youth. The Lord has sworn and will not relent. You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. And so in here, he's using two of the Old Testament messianic passages to identify with Christ. And in doing that, what he's arguing is that Christ meets that first criteria. And that is that Christ was divinely appointed. In Genesis chapter 14, because you have this idea of this order of Melchizedek, who was this Melchizedek bloke? And in Genesis 14, we're introduced to this guy called Melchizedek, and it says in verse 18, "Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was a priest of the God Most High. And he blessed him and said, 'Blessed be Abraham of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hands.' And he," and I put in Abraham, "gave him a tithe of all." For those who are familiar with our Old Testament history, Abraham will get renamed a bit later by God to be Abraham. And so here was a priest of God who predates Levitical system. Because Levi is a great-great-grandson of Abraham. Great-grandson. No, Aaron's a great-great-grandson. Yeah, you get it. Anyway, a bit later on. And so, when you're talking about priesthoods, high priest, appointed by God, of which priesthood? Well, first one you had was Aaron and the Levites. The second one is Christ and Melchizedek. And notice in the Psalm reference, he doesn't just say, "You will be a high priest and your household." He says, "You are a high priest forever." With Aaron's system, it was passed on that lineage. For Christ, it's a once and all. So he becomes high priest for all time. I'm not going to get into the tithe paying bit, because whoever is doing the later chapters will cover all of that. So, picking up then in verse 7, "Who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered his prayers and supplications with vehement cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, was heard because of his glory," of his godly fear. "Though he was a son, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. And having been perfected, he became the author of eternal salvation to all who obey him, called by God as high priest according to the order of Melchizedek." Notice the repetition, just in case you missed it the first time. So, what's he concentrating on in this part? Remember when he looked at Aaron, he looked at the idea of they had to have that sympathy, that compassion. And here he's picking up on that same concept, the ability to identify with the ones that you are serving. And he's talking about Christ. And notice he's talking about things like prayers, supplication, and suffering. It's interesting in the Greek. I won't go into the Greek for the rest of it. That's just for our Greek people. Suffering here, we have a negative connotation for the word suffering. In Greek, the word actually means to experience and can be either good or bad. So it doesn't have to be bad as per the way we understand it. All right? That's the connotation that it tends to have in English. So what's he saying in all of this? In the days in his flesh, Jesus, when he was alive on the earth, the human time, if you want to call it that, compared to the glory time, which was Acts 2 onwards, or Acts 1 onwards, did what? He was offering up prayers and supplications and talked about tears and vehement cries to the one able to save him from death. and he was heard. Why? Because of his godly fear. So the godly fear of the man meant God paid attention to him. Even though he was God's son, he still needed to live and endure and learn obedience through his experiences on the earth. The difference being, of course, he was sinless. But he still went through that. And why is that important? Because it's the same stuff that we go through. We live on the earth. We trust in God. We call out to God in prayer. The same thing. The difference being that Jesus never gave in to the temptation of sin. There'll be some discussion in chapter 12. I won't preempt that. I'll just make reference to it. And so you think about it. Jesus learned obedience this way. So ask yourself, well, how do I learn obedience to God? Do I follow Jesus' example, godly fear, seeking God for needs, etc.? All right, and we, like Jesus, are exposed to all these trials and tests. And as I said, Jesus was without sin in this. But the important part is that identification. And you look at passages like the suffering servant in Isaiah 53. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, we did not esteem him. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and as the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, as a sheep before its shearer is silent, so he opened not his mouth. He was taken from prison and from judgment, and who will declare his generation? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgressions of my people he was stricken. And they made his grave with the wicked, because with the rich at his death, because he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. And it's interesting when you look through that passage and you think about the suffering and what he went through and how therefore he can have compassion on us who go through the same things. And that idea of perfected, more Greek stuff for those who are in it. If not. So, what does it come down to? Christ has now been made complete. He's become the author of eternal salvation and high priest. So he's named by God as the high priest, again, according to order of Melchizedek. And so, qualifications of the old system, able to sympathize, identify with the people, divinely appointed. Christ, able to sympathize with the people, because he went through it too. Divinely appointed. The only difference, note, is he's appointed forever, different priesthood. And hence, superior. Now he ends up with this chapter with what best can be called an admonishment. I'll translate it into what we would say after I read it. Of whom we have much to say and hard to explain, since you have become dull of hearing. For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God. And you have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes not only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But solid food belongs to those who are of full age. That is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern good and evil. I used to teach computing courses. And I used to teach advanced computing courses. And when someone on an advanced computing course goes, "What's a mouse? How do I make it work?" You go, "Oh dear." It's kind of what he's saying here. I've got all this stuff to explain to you, and I've got a problem. You're dull of hearing. You're not putting the effort in, or you haven't put the effort in. You've been Christians a long time, and it's just going over your heads. You should have been the teacher. In fact, what you are is the little baby on that side. As far as this stuff that we're talking about. In other words, you're still learning. You're still learning the basics, and I've got to talk to you about the stuff that you do in university. Again, modern day sort of analogies. And he uses two analogies. One is the teacher and the baby. The other one is the solid food and the milk. So he describes all the basic stuff as milk. And then he talks about the stuff that he wants to talk about as solid food. You know, I want to feed you steak and chips, and you want a milkshake. Because you can't handle steak, you've got no teeth. Right? And he's not saying it to be funny. This is a description of what they should be and what they are. So, full age, someone who's done their apprenticeship, got their certificate, come out the other side, and has been working in it. Inexperienced is the guy who turns up for work experience on the first day, and he could possibly spell plumbing. If he's like me, he couldn't even do that. All right, some more Greek stuff. I won't go into it because I'm running out of time. So how do we get from milk to solid food? Well, he tells them what they should have been doing. He says, those who are on the meat, these are the ones who have the habit of exercising. And the exercise is the word, you know, the Olympics? That's the sort of exercise that he's talking about. That preparation type stuff. Vigorous workouts. The stuff you do with the PT at the gym. For all those who are so inclined. You've been doing that to be able to distinguish between what's right and what's wrong. That's what you've been working at, so that you can therefore live it. And that's what they talk about when he talks about, this is what you should have been doing. This is what you should have been working at. But now I've got to go back and teach you again from the beginning, because you've lost it. Not that you were got up to here and stopped, but you've gone backwards. So those who work with the word and learn it and apply it and live it as a righteous follower of God, that's what he's talking about. That practice, that use, that is what's building you to that solid food. And you've been good at it. So, in summary for the passage, Jesus meets the two qualifications that he puts forward as key things for the high priest. And that is that ability to identify with the people you serve and being divinely appointed. But then we have that admonition to the readers that they have not grown the way they should have done. In fact, they've gone backwards. And that's a kickstart to try and get them moving forward. So, lesson for us. First of all, our high priest is superior to the ones that they had under the Old Testament. But also, we as well need to be working at Christianity. And notice it's not just I might spend 5 minutes a day at it. That vigorous workout idea. So how is your workout going?